SiriusXM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Suicide in the Black community, it is a very real issue. Long gone are the days when we could hear the phrase, Black people don't do that. According to the Suicide Prevention Resource Center, the suicide rates for African Americans have seen a steady increase since 2011. Well, this is National Suicide Prevention Week, and we're taking a closer look at this difficult but extremely important issue. My guests are Dr. Danielle Hairston, psychiatrist and residency training director at Howard University Hospital, and Jade Mathis, attorney, mental health advocate, and reality TV star. Many of you may know she is the daughter of Judge Greg Mathis. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Lines are open right now at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Thank you both, Dr. Hairston and Jade, for joining this conversation. It's really important that you two are here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. Let me first start with why, Dr. Hairston, you believe that this week is particularly important. What is it that the Black community does not know about suicide?
I think that, as you alluded to earlier, that a lot of times people think that Black people don't get depressed, Black people don't engage in suicidal behavior, that they don't die by suicide. There's always a lot of questioning about, well, I never would have thought that person would do that. Black people don't do that. And I think that we don't recognize how someone might look or appear when they're thinking about this. Another important thing is that since 1993, we've seen an increase in a higher suicide rate in Black children. So we really have to pay attention to this because we might be missing some things that are going on.
That's so important. Can you give me some quick stats from your position? What do you understand are the numbers that we're starting to see related to suicide in the Black community?
So let me be clear that we in the Black community still have a lower suicide rate than other ethnic groups. So it is still lower than our white counterparts. The suicide rate for Black and African American populations is still lower than what we see in other groups, but it is increasing. Like, we've seen an increase from 2011 up to 2020. And then especially when we, and thank you to my students for helping me with this, especially when we look at the youth, we've seen a rate that has increased in Black children from 1.36 per million to 2.54 per million. So that's an increase while it's been decreasing in white children. It's also important to pay attention that maybe people have not been paying attention to Black children and considering that this might have been a suicide when we're looking at their causes of death.
Jade, we've seen suicides in the Black community committed by some high-profile people. Most recently here in our area, we saw the former mayor of Hyattsville, Kevin Ward. He committed suicide. We, of course, know the Miss USA, Chesley Christ. She committed suicide. And there's a laundry list of people who have taken their own lives. TV writer Jazz Waters, for example. There's a rapper, Capital Steez, for example. Some people more well known than others. Briefly share with us your struggle with a suicidal ideation and your thoughts about just where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a wonderful question. So what I think people don't realize, so myself in particular, I was diagnosed with clinical depression, ADHD, and two learning disorders a little over a decade ago while in college. And because mental health is still stigmatized in the African-American community, especially around that time, 10, 15 years ago, we really could not talk about it or reach out for help. So a lot of it was just internally sorting out your feelings and sorting out, you know, if I want to talk to someone for help and what are my next steps. But I was blessed enough to have the resources that I was able to go to therapy. I was able to have a psychologist and a psychiatrist that I saw on a regular basis. However, that's just the maintenance. That's the maintaining part of it. When you're talking about something like depression, and especially clinical depression, I tell people a lot of times, it's like a heavy, heavy rock that you cannot move and immobilizing a lot of times. And there have been times in my life, and anything can trigger your depression. It can be situational. It could be stress. It could be the weather sometimes. And there's been times, you know, with seasons changing or if I was just stressed out as an attorney, which is a very, very high-paced job when you're supposed to be high-functioning and people are thinking, you know, you're a super person, a superwoman like Chesley Chris. No one wants an attorney who has a mental health issue. That is what you're thinking of the world. You know, you think the world is treating you that way. But to have that heavy rock on you 24/7 and there's nothing else that you can do and you feel like you cannot have it lifted with medication, with therapy, sometimes it's not that you don't want to live anymore. You just want the pain to stop. And you've tried everything, or you're too embarrassed to talk to people about it because you don't want them to look at you as weak, and you just want it to end. And I tell people that a lot of times. It's not about being selfish. It's not about not considering your family or your friends. It's, I don't want to live like this anymore. My brain has a disease where it's not functioning like a person without a disorder. Mm-hmm. So my brain is not able to, you know, shoot through and say, I'll probably get over this. This isn't as big as I think it is. Your brain is kind of working against you, essentially. It's battling against you, and you already feel so low, and you can't reach out to anyone. So I've been in that place before where I just said, I have been so tired of being sad for 3-4 weeks at a time. Like, it is, it's relentless. It will not lift. And if I have to continue to be sad like this, then I would rather not be here. But, you know, on the flip side, I was able to say, I'm going to use this. I'm going to use my experience and my testimony to show other people in my community that it's okay not to be okay all the time and that you can still be successful and high functioning and have those mental disorders and struggle, and you can reach out. I reached out and told my office. I was a prosecutor here at the time for Prince George's County, and I said, I need a sabbatical. I went on FMLA and did intensive outpatient therapy because I said it is a lot. You know, it's a lot to manage the work. It's a lot to manage the depression. So unfortunately, when you have people who are in the limelight or in these high profile positions or careers, they don't want you to look at them a particular way. And that is exactly how I felt. But I said, it's not just for me. I have to speak up for them. Mm-hmm. So I completely understand what Mayor Ward was going through. I completely understand what Chesley Chris was going through. It's just, yeah, I completely understand it. I'm sorry, I don't want to get emotional, but I...
Well, getting emotional is okay because this is an emotional issue and we do need to talk about it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about suicide in the Black community. If you have questions, if you have comments, if you need help, and you want to share with us on this program, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One other number that you need to know about, and I'm sure that Dr. Hairston would agree, that the development of the suicide and mental health 988 number is a huge move for the mental health community as well as for the emergency responders community. Can you talk to me briefly about what that 988 number is and what it really means for those who are reaching out for help?
Sure. So 988 is the shortened number, emergency or crisis number that we previously had, the National Suicide Prevention number, which was a much longer number, a 1-800 number. So 988 has been rolled out across the country in each state and, of course, here in Washington, D.C. as a means for getting help quickly. So it might be that when you call 988, they refer you to still calling 911 because you're in an emergency, you're in a crisis, you have suicidal ideation, or you're dealing with someone in your family who has a mental health crisis that you need emergency services to come out. So that's an option. It also might be someone who that you can just talk to walk you through what the next step should be. So what are the next steps when you're feeling like you are having these suicidal thoughts? And I really want to encourage us to use the terms like death by suicide instead of commit suicide, because commit really implies like a crime is going on, and that's not what's happening. You know, it's a mental health crisis that someone's experiencing. So 988 is being rolled out as a mental health crisis helpline number that's shorter that people can remember without having to type out the whole 1-800 number. And I think that it's giving greater access. It depends on where you are. As we talked about, the former mayor of Hyattsville, which is very close to where I live, Hyattsville has been doing a lot to have social workers and mental health specialists accompany the police or come out to a crisis. Washington, D.C., the Department of Behavioral Health also has a mobile crisis who will be connected to that 988 number so that they can bring out specialists who can help people who are having a crisis or get you to the right place. So that's the purpose of the rollout of the 988 number.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, Jade said that she understood how Mayor Kevin Ward of Hyattsville felt. But my question to you, Dr. Harrison, is, in Jade's case, she said, you know, she was diagnosed with a mental illness a decade ago. We do not know whether or not Mayor Ward had any long-term mental health issues. We only know, and obviously this was revealed just weeks ago, that he was under investigation, federal investigation, for fraud and embezzling some $2.2 million from the Kipp School. And it was right 1 month after that that he took his own life. My question is there a difference between someone who we know has been struggling with mental health issues, diagnosed, and someone who apparently may have come up against an immediate crisis and takes their own life?
So there is a difference in how they might present. So I appreciate Jade saying and bringing up the point of it being stress or an event, or there might be a stressor. Mm-hmm. It's important to understand, as she said, it might even be like a change in season, like seasonal affective disorder is a real thing, that when you start having these darker, earlier days, people get feel more and more depressed. But it's key to understand that someone who dies by suicide or has suicidal ideation does not necessarily have to be depressed or did not necessarily meet the criteria for clinical depression or having depression. It's important that you understand that there's a key of hopelessness, like feeling that I cannot move past this, whether it's something I've been dealing with forever or it's a situation like we saw with the former mayor, that I can't escape this. My life is not going to get any better. The hopelessness is key, and that's something that we see a lot for people who are considering suicide, who have suicidal ideations, who engage in suicidal behavior. So the hopelessness is important to understand. They just don't have a sense. They cannot feel that the future will get any better or that life could get improve any further for the from the situation that they're in.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about suicide in the Black community. Let's go to Delma, calling from D.C. Delma, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just wanted to say that I truly hope that this new number will work. I have been through this. I went through this since 2020. And I made numerous calls into different agencies in Washington, D.C. And I actually had a woman that was addressing my issues while she was actually washing dishes and talking to her children and her dog all at the same time. People need help. And when people reach out, you don't know what's going to happen within that next second within their life. I was on escitalopram. I've been on Xanax. I've been on all of that. But glory to God, I'm not there anymore. But I always wanted to be an advocate because I say, what about the person that can't pull themselves out of this? And no, you don't have to show the signs. You can walk out and it can appear to be okay. I dealt with it with my son recently, who is in college, his last year for his PhD in neuroscience. And when he said he wanted to walk away, because two of his other friends, they did commit suicide all over the stress factor. It had become too much, and their parents weren't going to be happy about them giving up now.
Real quick, Dr. Harrison, what do you hear from Delma?
Well, I agree with Delma that I hope that the new 988 number does help, and I just want us to understand that help doesn't look the same for every person.
Not the same. That there are suicide prevention for one person does not mean it's the same suicide prevention and measures that I need. It's the same thing that Delma needs or the same thing that Jade needs. So we have to understand that sometimes suicide prevention looks like community engagement. It looks like support. It looks different because everyone experiences things differently. You might not show any signs of depression, but you might notice the things like isolation. You might notice people giving up, walking away, willing to give away their things, not caring about their money or funds anymore, saying that they just don't want to be alive or they don't understand anymore. Any point in their life. So that's something important to understand, that suicide prevention can't be the same for everyone, especially for everyone from our community, because everyone has different needs and different triggers in the context of their suicidal thoughts.
Delma, thank you so much for your phone call, and please continue to be mentally healthy. We appreciate your input.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fisher.
Sure
I appreciate
thing.
You as well.
Thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about suicide in the Black community. It is a very real issue. What you need to know. If you have a comment, if you have a question, don't hesitate to give us a call at 202-319-7810. I mentioned also the mental health crisis line, which is 988. There are also other resources that you can look for. Real quick, before I go to a break, Dr. Harrison, anything that you can suggest right before the break, please?
Resources that I like that are both national and local are NAMI, so NAMI, and that's support for families and people, and including youth who are going through mental health crises or have a family member who is experiencing a mental health crisis. So NAMI is very helpful because it has a national resources and website, but they have local chapters. So there's a DC chapter, a PG chapter, a Baltimore chapter. So you can find NAMI is very helpful. Mental Health America also has some helpful things to read and to help you to assess when you're doing your Googling, when you're trying to figure out what might be going on with yourself or others in your family.
Thank you so much. I'm going to take a quick break, but when we come back, more of this conversation. Kiana calling from D.C., we're going to talk to you. Pam, we're going to talk to you calling from Silver Spring. Jade, I have more questions for you as well. Looking forward to your input. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back with this conversation on SiriusXM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're taking a closer look at the difficult but important issue of suicide in the Black community. What you need to know. We continue with Dr. Daniel Harrison, psychiatrist and residency training director at Howard University Hospital, and Jade Mathis, attorney, mental health advocate, and reality TV star. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jade, you know, talked about, you know, your struggles regarding mental health. Most people are reticent to talk about these things publicly. What was it that made you do that?
Well, I think what probably gave me the boldness that I needed after, because I honestly did not divulge that until with anyone besides my parents and probably two of my very close friends, because I was so embarrassed for about a decade. But when I finally passed the bar exam, I struggled for 3 years, took it 6 times, and I finally passed it. I said, other people who are struggling with issues need to hear my story. They need to see that you can still be successful. You can still look, quote unquote, as society says, normal. You can still be, you know, well put together, and you can have a mental illness, and that's okay. And working as a prosecutor, what I started to see, especially in a primarily African-American community and county, is that a lot of the people who were in front of me, who I was tasked with incarcerating, it wasn't the right thing to do. It did not sit right with my spirit, because I could tell that they were mentally unwell. But instead of getting the treatment that they needed, a lot of them was going to the Department of Correction because there were not enough resources for them, or the system could not handle them. So I said, I have to start speaking up, because they're, but for the grace of God, go I. That could have been me. The majority of people with mental health issues, or how people envision them, is speaking to themselves on the side of the street or homeless. And that is not our reality. The reality is you can be very high functioning like me, and I wanted other people to see that. Mental health does not discriminate as far as class, education, income, name, fame, notoriety, none of the above. And that's why I made sure on our reality show on E! Television, that was one of my main platforms, because that's something that America needs to hear about, and you do not hear about in that light and on television.
What was the reaction when you decided that you wanted that to be part of the main platform? Did you get any pushback? Did you have any second thoughts about going public?
So I will honestly tell you, that was probably, it was in 2015 when I first shared my story. Till this day, I have yet to hear one negative comment, one negative, you know, I haven't received any negative feedback. I thought people were going to, you know, receive it a little different and say, oh, she's Judge Mathis' daughter. Oh, she's fine. Oh, she's rich. How could she be this? Or her dad is famous. I have never received one bad comment. In fact, I have been speaking for the last 5 years, and I resigned as a prosecutor last year to do this mental health advocacy full time and partner with organizations and universities and churches, faith-based communities, particularly because I'm a believer and they don't believe in talking about it there. You can't pray it away. So that is one of my main platforms, but it has been an overwhelming sense of love, support. I mean, bookings. It's just an area that I think was well needed, but everyone was scared to tap into. And I just said, you know, God, you gave this to me for a reason, and you knew I could handle it. So I want to make sure I'm representing it correctly.
Okay. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Pam, calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for hanging on, Pam. What's on your mind?
My doctor prescribed fluphenazine, trihexvenadol, and Zoloft for me. The side effects are suicidal, blurred vision, pain in the stomach, tremors, shakes, and much more. And when I asked her to change my medicine, she said she was the doctor and I had to do what she said. I've been asking her for decades to lower the dose of my medicine. I did get suicidal in 2019 and 2020. I called 988 before, and I got a rookie, someone who didn't know how to have a two-way conversation. And she wanted me to talk and talk and talk on and on. And then she said, I don't know what to tell you, that suicide is criminal and funerals cost $9,000 and up. And I told her I was not a criminal. And when she told, I asked her.
Well, hold on, Pam. Hold on for a second, because there's a lot to what you're sharing with us. So, Dr. Harrison, I guess first and foremost, what should someone do when they are, and obviously you don't know anything about Pam, what her diagnosis is and the like, but obviously she is, you know, in conflict with her physician regarding the drugs that she's been prescribed. How should a patient handle this?
Yes, I don't know exactly what's going on with Pam, and I'm sorry that was...
Hold on, Pam, I need you to turn your radio down, please, okay? Turn your radio down. Please go right ahead, Dr. Harrison.
Okay, and that was an unfortunate experience, and that's why, as a residency training director, I really try to encourage my residents to... treat everyone as a person and not try to lump people into one cluster. Like each individual is going through things differently and experiencing different things, and they react to medications differently. It's usually best to work with your doctor, but sometimes, you know what, sometimes you have to try a different doctor. Just like sometimes you have to try a different medication or maybe a lower dose. Psychiatric medications and mental health medications are just like any other medications. They have side effects. While they do have good qualities, and to improve and help, you do need to make sure that you pay attention to your body and how it's reacting. Sometimes it's a lower dose. Sometimes it's making changes slower. But if you do experience a physician or a therapist or a crisis caller who is not, who you don't feel like is listening or you can't work with, then of course, we would encourage you to ask to speak to another clinician or if there's anyone else available. I have never heard of someone saying that, you know, suicide is criminal and referencing the cost of funerals. So that's a completely inappropriate and unhelpful response. I would say that here in D.C. with the Department of Behavioral Health, they are very open and willing. They have various people who can help us. And as well as in, I'm not sure about all the resources in Montgomery County, but in PG County, especially in Hyattsville, they are making efforts to improve. So I hope that if you need to call 988 again, then you will have an improved situation. But it is important to advocate for yourself. Sometimes you might need to have someone advocate with you. So that's why it's important to have someone like Jade, who is an advocate and does speak out and speak about addressing stigma and how we can function with medication and with therapy and still be living our best lives. So I'm sorry that was the experience, but I hope that Pam will not give up on mental health and psychiatric needs care.
And as you said, being your own advocate may mean that you look for other clinical resources or perhaps finding another doctor that may be in an option if you're no longer comfortable with the physician who is treating you. Pam, thank you so much, and I wish you a good health. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kiana calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just calling, honestly, to offer some gratitude to you all, just to say thank you for speaking on this topic. I'm a 30-year-old woman, and as a millennial and as an artist, I definitely have struggled with what you all were talking about, like hyperactive depression. I've never claimed myself as being depressed, but I definitely understand the waves and what we're going through. Specifically for my age group, I do think that we are mentally struggling because we're in the middle of, in my opinion, two worlds. A world that our parents told us about that was a bit more secure and had a bit more, you know, structure. And in this world that we're coming into, that, you know, has a lot of possibilities, but also doesn't have all the guarantees that we've been taught. And, you know, growing up or, you know, going through this mentally, just speaking on our age group, it can be really difficult. Just like for everybody else, it seems, even working with children, everybody is seeming like they're struggling in some kind of way. So I wanted to offer gratitude to you all for just being bold and strong to speak out about what you're going through, because it is hard. As a Black woman, I feel like, you know, I have to have a certain persona about myself. And I do think that a lot of us feel that way. We try to always keep it together. We always try to, you know, do what we need to do for our family. But that doesn't change what we're going through mentally. So I applaud you all. And I just wanted to say thank you. And I would love to help in any kind of way if there's any way that I can be helpful.
Thank you for that. Well, Kiana, because I'm a millennial like you are. And I think that our age group are starting to finally figure out or learn that it's okay not to be okay all of the time.
Yes, absolutely.
I want to agree because I'm also a millennial. And I think that a little bit more than us, the Gen Z, they are much more likely to talk about their issues, but I think they wouldn't have been able to do it without what we did. And I think that it is important that we advocate for ourselves and speak out against about this, not just for ourselves, but also for the generations, our parents above us. Because when I chose psychiatry in medical school, a lot of people in my family were disappointed with that choice. They felt like, well, that's what you're going to do. You're going to talk to crazy people. And I'm like, we all need mental health help. It's not about talking to quote unquote crazy people. But now, 10 years later, I'm in the space where my mother is saying, you know, Michelle Obama has depression. We've all become depressed in this pandemic. And she's out here telling people that my daughter is a psychiatrist at Howard. Yes, you need to talk about it in the Black community. So I think that, we are doing what we can for ourselves. And I also want to state that even before we started this call, I went to my own therapy because it's a lot. It's a lot for all of us to handle and to carry on our shoulders. So if my team knows, I'm like, excuse me, I'm leaving Tuesdays. I'm making sure I'm ready for my virtual visit with my therapist, who happens to be a Black woman with natural hair, wears glasses like me, so someone I can identify with. So I appreciate you calling in, because I think that we are moving forward, but it is our generation who has been pushing this as well.
Kiana, thank you so much for your phone call. I do want to, I am not a millennial. So let me just say that. But in all seriousness and anecdotally speaking, you know, I was looking at, you know, some of the statistics, Dr. Harrison, that you were talking about earlier. And first of all, we talked about the suicide rate in the Black community increasing exponentially from 2011 to 2020. You mentioned earlier that the numbers are not as are lower in the Black community than they are in other communities. First question regarding this series of questions that I have right now, why are they lower?
So why are they lower is a good question, and it's multifactorial. It's a lot going on with why are they lower. First of all, there's not too much research in this within the Black community. So there's not too many people looking at these numbers. First of all, it wasn't until recently that people even thought that, oh, Black people die by suicide. Let's look into this. We also have the stigma in our communities where we're less likely to talk about it. So if someone happens to have died by suicide in families, they're less likely to bring that up. I don't know if you all have ever had that experience where someone might die, might pass away, and they don't say anything about what happened to them. It's very hush-hush. And you wonder, like, did this person die by suicide? What happened here? So there's less attention. There's less willingness to talk about it. There's less even consideration that this might have been a suicide within our community, but also within the professionals who continue to keep up this stigma or this mentality that Black people well, we already know they think black people don't feel pain, so that black people don't go through these crises, or that they're quote unquote resilient. A lot of times resiliency is used as, yes, a badge of honor, but sometimes as a weapon against us. So there's a lot of reasons why the numbers are lower, but we also have protective factors. We have community. There's, as Jade mentioned, faith. Now, there are these forward-thinking, faith-based leaders who will talk about mental health issues, who will talk about support in the community. So there's a lot going on, Harold, a lot.
So, okay. But, and you mentioned about, I don't know whether it's protective communities or a lot. And I'm speaking anecdotally, as I said, because among the 50 and older set, my circle of friends and acquaintances, and this is not scientific, this is just observational, where I remember, unless I missed it, and I'm not just talking about black people, I'm talking about young people. As far as I know, when I was in high school, there was nobody in our, not only in my class, but in the 3 years that I was in high school, of any young person who took their own life. And I'm not saying it didn't happen, but we didn't know about it. If it did, we did. I remember we did lose a classmate, but it was in a car accident, and he was not black. Okay, when I was in college, went to an HBCU, and I've had this conversation with my colleagues who went to school with me during the 1980s, and the question that I've asked that my colleagues and my friends and my frat brothers and all, you know, they said, why is this happening now? Because they'll say, well, this didn't happen when we were in school. Why is this an issue now? It's not a rhetorical question. It's a real question. Your thoughts about that? Because we didn't know. We didn't know about, obviously there was no discussion about mental health issues. You know, we know, yeah, some people, you know, they go to school, they get homesick or other issues. Maybe they couldn't hack it. I suspect those were mental health issues. But I can only remember actually one of my frat brothers who did take his own life. But he was older than me, and it was after he got out of graduate school. And that, so help me navigate those difficult questions. Is it that nobody was talking about it? Like you said, are they not reporting it? Why didn't we know then?
It's all of those things. It might have been happening, but you never heard about it.
Right.
Someone might have left school. I see, you know, that I work in the emergency department. I see the majority of the patients who come in a suicide attempt or with suicidal thoughts or ideations here in D.C. that come to Howard University Hospital. And a lot of times, if they're students from various universities, including ours, they might just go home. Mm-hmm. They might just go home, and no one says why they went home or why they withdrew or what happened. It's just they're no longer here, or they had to take the semester off, because we continue to carry and to perpetuate this stigma. So a lot of times there is this, well, we're just not going to talk about it. We don't want anyone to know. A lot of times parents will say, I'll come pick up my child. Can you just not tell anyone?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. They don't want them to know about that struggle. And even the children will say, like, or the patients or the students will say, you know, I know that my uncle had this problem, or my grandfather had this problem, but we don't really talk about it, so I don't know what their diagnosis really was. So there's a lot of us not really talking about what was happening in our families. Mm-hmm. And on the more positive, protective side, we do have, yes, a lot of times patients will say, well, I'm not going to do that because I have my children. Like, a lot of times children and families are protective factors that keep you together. But when you get to that point, as I said earlier, of like hopelessness, I just don't feel like I can go on anymore, then even that's not enough to hold them together. And I think that while we have seen improvement, we continue to have the stigma, and it continues to exist because we lived so long in a place where, since enslavement, where if you're having a problem, you can't talk about it if you want to survive. If you're having a feeling, you can't talk about it so that you can go on. You can't express that you're tired. You can express that you're tired or that you missed your family or that you're sad. So for so long, that has been passed down from generation to generation, and that's generational trauma. And that's why these things that are continued to be perpetuated. So the stigma of not talking about it, the shame. A lot of times people feel shame if they're, one, if they're experiencing these thoughts themselves, but also if their children are or their parents are or someone that they're related to.
Is suicidal ideation normal among preteens? In other words, I know it's common, but is it normal? Does everybody at one point, whether it's a flash in the pan momentary thought or something a little bit longer, let's say, again, among, you know, adolescents or pre-adolescents, where they just, you know, want to end it all because, you know, developing into a teenager is just difficult and challenging and fraught with unknowns. Is that a normal thing? And if it is normal, what is the difference between someone who may have a brief suicidal ideation because the challenges of growing up are just there, and someone who is seriously mentally ill and at risk of taking their own life?
I don't want us to normalize that. No. Everyone has suicidal ideations or everyone thinks about killing themselves or death by suicide. But what we do see, and let me say the disclaimer, I am not a child psychiatrist.
Right.
That what we do see is that would be normal. It's thoughts about life, what is life like? Like, what is the purpose of life? Why am I here? What would it be like if I'm not here? Like,
right.
My family would care about me.
I broke up with my girlfriend. I broke up with my boyfriend. It's the end of the world. Yeah.
A lot of despair in that time because they're dealing with a lot of transitions and changes and hormones and all different types of thoughts and opportunities. So do they think about, like, what's the point of me living? That's what we call, like, a passive death wish. Like, why am I here? Would people care if I wasn't here? So there's a lot of thoughts like that. And those would be normal thoughts. But I think something that we also have to consider when you were asking about why now is that there's the internet. There is social media. So there is cyberbullying. And, you know, even in my own house, my own family this weekend, one of the older people in my family was saying, like, who even has time for this bullying? Like, but he doesn't understand that when you're engaged in this social media all the time, always here, in your face, literally in your hands, that, yeah, bullying is something. And a lot of times, Black youth can be exposed to bullying. The numbers say that they're exposed to bullying at equal amounts of rates, just like white children. So, there's this traumatic stress in communities. We have to think about that. So is it normal to have suicidal ideations? I can't say it's normal, but to have these thoughts, to have these challenges, to be going back and forth within yourself, yeah, that's normal, especially during this age.
What's the term? I've never heard that before, and I think it's important. You said passive?
Oh, a passive death wish.
I think there needs to be, we need to differentiate between that. Because as you said, a lot of people may have a passive death wish, which is, as you're suggesting, quite different from a suicidal ideation.
Yes, and I would love for Jay to give her thoughts on this too, because I think this is something that we don't really differentiate, but I do when I teach and I train my medical students and residents. It's is this a suicidal ideation? And especially when I get consults, like, is it someone going through a chronic illness? They've been dealing with this for a long time and they think, like, I just can't go on like this. Like, what's the point of living like this? Or is it, I want to die in this way. I don't want to be here. So there's differences in that, and that's important, and that's something that we have to understand as physicians, as clinicians, physicians in various specialties, because that's who refers to me when they're concerned, but also just as people. Like, is it something that's starting as, why am I going to be here, or why should I be here, something passive versus something active, like I want to die by doing this and this.
Jade, your thoughts.
Yeah, and I think it's absolutely important to know those differences because, one, you can pinpoint how to help the person, right? So if someone is just saying, you know, like you said, a passive death wish, it could be something that it fleets. It's something fleeting. Because I would honestly say I don't think I've ever had a passive death wish. And mine may teeter. When I do go to my therapist and psychologist, and they always say, you know, standard question, have you had any suicidal ideation? Sorry. but I generally tell them no. So what I experience, and like I said, it's just depending on what mood I am in, what is going on around me, how I'm feeling internally, if I'm stressed out. And I may just say, I cannot deal with this anymore. Like, I would rather not be here than deal with that. But I've never gotten to the extent where I said, this is it. I need to leave and check in somewhere because I am not well and I am not going to make it at home tonight, or I do not trust myself. So I think it's very important because when I have gotten to that point or I've had those feelings, I at least have one or two people that I can reach out to and say, I'm not doing well, or if I'm not answering the phone for an extended amount of time, they know to come knock on the door and to have me come outside or to bring me food or bring me flowers, just friends and checking in with me. Whereas, like you said, if this is something that you are really contemplating suicide and it's been for a while, you need a different form of help. You may need someone to help you help yourself. So I think, like you said, with the younger generation, and I tell people all the time, I think the social media is making a huge difference and a huge impact. I am very anti-social media. I will be on for business purposes or to, you know, my ministry for the mental health advocacy to talk about those things. But I always take a break. I am queen of deactivation, deleting, blocking, because what I do is I take an inventory and I'll see how I feel before something, during something, and after something. And I always notice that I never felt better after scrolling on social media. I never felt better. I always felt low. I always felt like I was comparing myself. I always felt worthless. And if you're already feeling because of depression or anxiety, you already have those feelings that a lot of times you cannot control. What you don't need is an outside contributing factor. And as a child or, you know, a young adult, you're probably not able to differentiate this is what that is. Mm-hmm. This feelings and this lowness that just seems it would not let up or give up. This is coming from what I'm looking at on social media and how I'm looking at my life or comparing my life. So absolutely, I think the difference is that social media now, it brings out a different beast with mental health, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. And I, you know, would argue that young people, old people, people in between, I don't think anybody was prepared for what social media has wrought on the broader community, on the Black community in so many ways. It's an effective and helpful tool in some ways, but in other ways, it is not helpful or healthy. Jade Mathis, Dr. Danielle Harrison, thank you both for sharing with us. Jade, I wish you the best of health.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Sure thing.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, September 6th. I'm Harold Fisher.